Welcome to No More Desire. My name's Jake Castleman. I've had personal experience with what it takes to get clean and stay clean of porn. And now I'm helping others just like you break free and step into their new life. Through one-on-one coaching, daily check-ins, and life-changing material, I help others break free of porn and never look back. To discover how you can overcome porn addiction, go to nomoredesire.com. Welcome to No More Desire. My name is Jake Castleman. When addiction cravings hit, what do? Do you fight the addiction? Do you resist it? Do you just try to not think about it and distract yourself? I'm here to tell you that none of these options work, at least not long term. They can work in the short run sometimes, but not in the long run. That's because willpower is finite. It runs out. Willpower, white-knuckling it, distracting yourself, these are not long-term solutions for recovery. They are not solutions for recovery in general because they just don't last. And they don't get down to the root causes of addiction. So what can you do instead? Today, I'm going to give you four simple practices you can use when you face addiction cravings. And I'm going to talk to you about several underlying philosophies about those as well, and spiritual matters behind them. And before we get started with these, if you want to go much, much deeper into the cause of addiction, the solutions for recovery, download my free ebook at nomoredesire.com. You can also go to the description of this podcast to get that free ebook. I'll shoot it to your email. It is 80 pages of material, really of things that I've learned over the last decade of my own recovery and also of listening to and doing some work with others. So check that out, nomoredesire.com, or go to the description where it says free ebook and download it. So imagine you're experiencing an addiction craving or a trigger. What do? You need to build a habit of being aware of your mindset, okay, and what your brain is focused on. We're going to talk about this first before I get into the four practices, because this is very, very important. It's easy to let your mind wander and fantasize before you even realize what's happening, right? To get sober, you need to go from an unconscious to a conscious state. And I don't mean unconscious versus conscious, like asleep versus awake, in a spiritual sense, perhaps. But I really mean it as you're unconscious to or unaware of these things that your brain is doing, where it's linking stress, it's linking things like feelings of fear or shame, feelings of wanting to escape, worry about the future, regret about the past. It's linking these things to cravings, right? So we feel these different negative or dark emotions, and then we feel addiction cravings. But all we perceive is just the craving of wanting the addiction. So we really need to become, on a high level, in order to get sober, we need to become conscious of these things. We need to step back and observe our mind and where cravings are really coming from. When we crave porn, drugs, alcohol, food, whatever it is, whatever our addiction is, our limbic system, or in other words, the reward-centered part of our brain, is leading the show. So instead, we want to build habits of our prefrontal cortex. That's the logical, moral director of our brain. We need to get it back online. We want it to lead the show instead. Or in other words, we want to go from the natural man, or the ego, as it's referred to as in Buddhism. We want to go from those leading the show to our soul, or the light of Christ, running the show. And to do this requires us to build new habits. It doesn't come without effort on our part, right? But that said, it isn't about trying hard. It's about trying right. It's about centering our efforts on things that actually work, right? I can try hard all day on whatever it is, but unless I know how to try correctly in a way that actually leads to the outcome I'm wanting, which is sobriety, recovery, peace of mind, selflessness versus selfishness, right? And I'm not calling any addicts selfish. I totally understand what addiction is like, but I'm saying a self-centered perspective is what fuels addiction, whereas an others-centered or God-centered perspective fuels recovery. If we want to move into that God-centered, others-centered perspective, we have to try in the right way. So this said, you know, as we move into these four practices, the first thing that we need to understand fundamentally is that addiction stems from resistance, or you could call it escape. But also, I think resistance is more accurate in that it covers more things overall. And that sounds counterintuitive sometimes, right? But if you've listened to other episodes, I explain this. This is not resistance to the addiction itself, but resistance to the challenging emotions and to the truth within our souls that we want to live according to. Again, addiction stems from resistance to challenging emotions and to the truth within our souls that we want to live according to. Because I believe fundamentally we are all good inside, right? That's our soul. That's the light of Christ that's within every single one of us. It's our true origin, right? We all originated having heavenly DNA. That's who we are. It's how we know the difference between good and evil, in my view, in my beliefs. And so when we are in a state of resistance, we're in fear, we're in shame, we're in pride. These are all counter to what we feel deep within, this peace, this love we feel within, what that force would have us do. We're in resistance to it. Whereas, as Christ explained, when we surrender, when we take his yoke upon us and his burden, which is light, right? His yoke is easy, his burden is light. We stop resisting and having things our way and start giving our weaknesses up to Christ, giving our lives up to Christ. We then begin to move into a state of acceptance and surrender, which is recovery. We can't overcome addiction by using the same mentality of resistance that got us there in the first place. Again, this doesn't mean not resisting the addiction. There is some resistance at times that we may need to use in order to resist certain temptations or to stay out of vulnerable situations. But ultimately, our task is not to resist the addiction. It is to live with a mentality of acceptance and surrender. That's not acceptance of the addiction or surrender to the addiction. It's an acceptance of challenging emotions, right? So instead of resisting challenging emotions like fear or anger or sadness or shame or guilt, right? It's about turning to and looking at them directly and making peace with them. It's about accepting them. And it's also about accepting the truth within our souls that comes from God, acceptance of his love and his help in all things, because it's always available, even when we believe we don't deserve it, right? His grace is available if we will turn to him and invite him in. That is the surrender. That is the acceptance. So as far as these four simple practices I'm going to share with you, what does this acceptance and surrender look like as far as those go? Because these any practice to overcome addiction should incorporate in some kind of way this acceptance or this surrender. I believe. So practice number one is to have an accountability buddy. And if you've listened to other addiction recovery programs or things, you've likely heard this. But this is an important one, right? And it takes a lot of humility. Again, it takes surrender in order to say, okay, I need help. I can't do this by myself. That is step one in the 12 steps, right? For a reason. It's to surrender and give up saying, I can do this myself, and to start saying, I need other people's help. I need God's help. I'm going to invite that help in. God is our ultimate accountability buddy, right? But we also need people to lean on and be honest with about our crap. And this requires humility. It requires surrender. It requires us to take off our mask and get real with another person about our weaknesses, about our addictions. It requires us to say, hey, man, I'm experiencing cravings right now. I just need someone to talk to. And it requires us making an initial connection to actually find someone who we can go to and talk to. For me, I'm part of a group, right? I go to that group almost every week. Any week that I can make it, I'm there. I'm in a 12-step group. You know, I have accountability buddies. I have people that I speak to on a regular basis in order to keep me real, honest, humble, to help me see things from different perspectives, to help me stay sober. I need that group. I need people to rely on, not just to stay sober, right? I've been sober for almost 9 years now. I did a lot of that without accountability buddies. But meanwhile, I still had all sorts of addictions that were just more covert, maybe. I don't know if that's a good word for it, but they were addictions like addiction to exercise, addiction to nutrition, addiction to work, right? Being a workaholic, codependence, a lot of different addictions that aren't as cliche or aren't as noticeable as a drug addiction, alcoholism, porn addiction, right? These things that I had going on in my life previously that I really saw like, oh, this is an addiction. It just morphed into other things over that, you know, nearly 8 years until finally I realized, wow, I need people. Like, that was one of the things that I came to acceptance of. I need other people to lean on and learn from. And so I became a part of a group and got in 12-step in large part for that reason, so I could learn from other people and have other people to rely on, lean upon, and learn from. So that's important. And I will also say with that, a lot of times I think when we're part of groups or we have an accountability buddy, as addicts, we can get in this habit of coming to our buddy after we've given into our addiction. And that's well and good. That's part of the process sometimes, but it's not the point. That's the weaker thing to do, just to be perfectly frank. The stronger thing, the thing that's harder to do, is to come to your buddy before you give in. Okay, the confession, because we always talk about confession in addiction recovery, the confession is better held before you engage in the addiction rather than after. To confess your feelings of stress, of weakness, of addiction cravings, you know, whatever things might be actually fueling the addiction cravings as you become more and more aware of that. You know, maybe you feel insecurity about your abilities in school. Maybe you feel insecure about your work relationships. Maybe you fight in your marriage and it causes you a great deal of shame and stress and to beat yourself up, right? These things are fueling your addiction. So you need to get real with your accountability buddy and confess these things to them. And an accountability buddy can be anybody. It can be multiple people, but someone hopefully who understands addiction, and who is very well aware of yours, and who you can fully open up to and who listens. So that's important. Practice two is to give up your devices. And we're talking electronic devices. Or if you have, you know, that's as far as porn addiction, or if it was, you know, video game addiction or other things like that. Whatever it is that's giving you access to your addiction. So let's focus on porn here, obviously, because that's my main audience. This is something you have to do if you're hoping to overcome porn addiction. Probably for at least the first 3 to 6 months, you're going to need to give up your devices. And I know that that sounds like, oh my gosh, I could never do that. That's an insane ask, Jake. Don't ask me to do that. Right? Our brain makes up a lot of excuses or a lot of reasons why we can't do this. And before I talk more about this, I want it to be understood. I'm not saying that you can't have a computer or even a smartphone, perhaps, if that's something you can manage. But I am saying that you need to have some really strict limitations and commitments with those devices as far as when you have them and when you do not. And again, this should, in my mind, take place for at least the first 3 to 6 months. Now, that said, I think the addict brain often then says, oh, 3 to 6 months, and then I'm good. Okay, so it's only going to take 3 to 6 months, and then, like, I'll have overcome my addiction. Like, I'll have it in the bag. No, it's not true. Okay, so I've been sober almost 9 years. From porn, I've got to every single day be aware of where my mind set is, where my mind is at, what I'm focused on. There's a lot of thoughts like fantasizing or even thinking about porn or any of that stuff that I just need to keep completely out of my mind. I don't go there. It's very rare for me to go into zones of fantasizing or things like that. God be praised for that. And obviously that has become much, much easier, right, over the years. As I've repeated these habits, I've changed my lifestyle. I've turned to God. His light has helped me build new habits. But I still need to keep up with that, right? Recovery never ends. It's a continuous journey. It's ongoing. It's one day at a time. So don't think that after the 6 months of you having these limitations with your devices, of giving them up and not having them at certain times of the day, don't think that after that your journey ends. I will say that during my recovery process, twice I was sober for an entire year. Twice I was sober for a year and slipped up and relapsed after a whole year of sobriety. Twice. And it sucked. But it was such a valuable lesson, and I hope you never have to experience this lesson. I hope you can just learn it from me. It was a valuable lesson that I was never... Recovery never ended. The journey was never done. You know, I got to this point thinking like, oh yeah, like my life has changed so much. My mindset has changed so much. I really don't like have a problem with this stuff anymore. I really don't need to be worried about porn addiction anymore. And so I went about engaging in activities and not keeping certain boundaries in my life that I knew I needed to in order to continue recovery. I let those things slide. And sure enough, I relapsed. Don't do it. If you know things that are working for you in your recovery, keep doing them forever. And that doesn't mean that doesn't shift or change or become more flexible over time. For instance, you know, I used to spend an hour a day or more in scripture study and prayer. Probably excessive, right? But I had a lot of very overwhelming emotions. And that time really gave me what I needed in some ways, I think it gave me what I needed in some ways to really draw upon the power of God that I needed for the first several years. And then after that, I was able to decrease that time. You know, for me now, each morning, I wake up, I do 20 minutes of prayer, 20 minutes of scripture study. For some people, that sounds like a lot. I totally get that. But that is the root of my recovery. It is that connection with God that I have, and I need that every day. But it looks different for me, right? I used to spend like twice that amount of time, and I don't do that anymore. There were other things that I needed to be super strict about in the past. Obviously, I used to need to give up my electronic devices at certain times of the day. No longer need to do that, right? I can feel more stable in and trust myself enough that I know if I am going into a vulnerable state, I'll know that. And those kinds of experiences are far more infrequent now than they were years ago. So it's shifted, right? It's changed. And I don't want you to think that it'll never change, right? But just to know that you keep boundaries around your recovery. You keep doing what works. And then you shift and change in ways that make your recovery more whole, more manageable, right? As your mind hopefully becomes less and less anxious or depressed or things like that, you're able to make some positive shifts in your life, live life with a little more flexibility. So anyway, that was a long tangent. Just going back to this concept of giving up your devices, when you're initially trying to overcome addiction, you have to have designated times that you hand your electronics over to a parent, a spouse, a friend, if that's a roommate, right? Someone you live with. This should be someone you live with, most likely. And look, if this feels ridiculous to you, if it's like, man, I shouldn't need to give up my electronic device. Like, I can handle this. I can do this. Think about a heroin addict. Think about a heroin addict in recovery who's going through detox. Would it be cool if when they went into a recovery facility, if their recovery officer or something, I'm sorry, I don't know the exact term for that, but if they handed them a heroin needle the day they came in and they said, hey, keep this with you at all times. And if you slip up and use heroin, that's your own dang fault. You should be stronger. Would that be okay? That would not be okay, right? We would never think that was in the realm of reasonable at all. And yet we do that to ourselves when it comes to things like porn addiction or video game addiction or whatever it is. Right, but porn addiction specifically, with how strong and powerful it can be, it is processed very similarly, if not identical, to the way that cocaine addiction is processed in the brain. It is very addictive. It's highly addictive. Okay, and that doesn't mean there's the type of physical withdrawals there are from cocaine, but the emotional and the mental withdrawals are intense. They're very challenging. And so you need a period of sobriety, again, for about the first 3 to 6 months, where you give over these devices at times where you know you're vulnerable. So you say, okay, from 8 o'clock p.m. to 8 a.m. or whatever it is, 7 a.m., I am giving over this device to my parent or my roommate or my spouse, and I don't get it back. Those are the times where I give over my device and they have it from this time to this time, and I get it back in the morning. Let me give you an example, okay, of this when it comes to my life. There was a point in time where I actually never did homework at home, right? Back when I was in college and things. I wouldn't do homework at home because I was alone when I did it at home. And I loved the comfort of being at home doing my homework, but it put me in a very vulnerable situation when it came to porn addiction. And so it took me months to accept this, but for a period of time, I needed to go to the library every time I needed to do homework. I could not stay in the house. And yes, that required an extra drive. Yes, it took more time. But I knew that if I were out in a public area with other people around me, accountability buddies, if you will, though they don't know that, then I would not engage in my addiction out in this public area, obviously. And there's ways out of that. You could head to the bathroom and do that. Look, if you're going to do that, that's that, like, in that way, yes, there's always a way around it, but put yourself in good situations and pray to God that He'll help you make peace with your cravings and help give you grace and strength that you may, your desires may change so that you can let go of these addictions. So you've got to practice honesty. Okay? You need to be real with yourself and another person, right? When you're in a vulnerable spot and you need them to take your electronic device, it requires humility. And you'll have your planned out times where you don't have these devices. And then in the times where when you start to feel vulnerable, like you know your mind is starting to, because you, as you become aware of this, you'll know when your mind is starting to go into that addict zone. Don't listen to all the thoughts that are like, I need this, or, oh, I'm sure I'm just fine, or all the justifications, you know, where your mind says, I don't need to give over my device. I'll manage it. Like, I'll be just fine. And you know you're going down this spiral to what I call, what my father calls the funnel, where eventually you hit the funnel. And once you're inside of it, everything else, all your other priorities, all your other desires disappear. Once you're there, it's too late. You're not going to give up your device. You're going to go engage in your addiction. There's just a point of no return. Do it before that. Give up your device before that happens, well before that. And better yet, once you've moved further into recovery, you can become aware of the types of thoughts and feelings that eventually lead to addiction cravings, such as anger, depression, anxiety, fear, shame, right? The feeling of not being good enough, shaming yourself for things that you do, the perfectionism, right? Obsessive thinking. These types of things are what are eventually evolving into addiction cravings. And you start to become aware of those and you know, okay, this is where my mind's at right now. I know that if this continues and advances, it could become cravings. So what I'm going to do instead is I'm going to take some time to process through this, either with myself or with God or with a friend or all three, instead of getting myself into a vulnerable mindset. So that takes me to practice three. Again, practice one, right? Accountability buddy. Practice two, give up your devices during scheduled times and when you're feeling vulnerable. And practice three is to avoid vulnerable situations. So, when do you most often engage in your addiction? That's something you need to ask yourself and make a plan based on that. For instance, for me, it was at night, late at night specifically. It was on vacation. It was after vacation. And when it was when I was at home alone. So I knew that I needed to stay out of all those situations. I could not have a computer or smartphone with me in those situations. Or if I did, I needed to be in a public space or a space where someone was there with me. And more specifically with being on vacation or after vacation, this is so common for addicts, so common. Of slipping up or relapsing on vacation or after vacation. On vacation, you're way outside of your normal routine. A lot of people think they can take breaks from their spiritual health or physical health when they're on vacation. They can abuse their bodies with tons of junk food, no exercise, and just sitting around, do nothing of any meaning, and that they can also just not pray, not read of scripture, and then they wonder why they relapse hard, either while they're on vacation or when they come back. You have to keep doing those things that support your recovery every day. No matter what, you never get a break. And that might sound discouraging, and in a way it is. It's hard. It took me a long time to accept that. And I still feel like, man, I wish I didn't need to always do this. I wish I didn't need to always read of scripture and pray every day. I wish I could, live a day where I just sit around and just do nothing and watch movies because that sounds so relaxing. And the simple fact is, if I sit around all day, I do nothing that builds my spiritual well-being. I do nothing that really brings me any meaning or happiness or any kind of purpose. I'm going to feel like crap, and I'm going to be prone towards addiction. And I don't want to do that. I don't want to feel that way. So we need to be real about that. And we need to stay out of these situations. And that requires humility. So become aware of your vulnerable situations. If you are vulnerable when you are at home alone, don't be at home alone. And you'll think like, well, it's just inevitable. There's sometimes where like I'm at home, my spouse is gone, they're at work, and it's just me in the house for 2 hours or whatever in between work and school or whatever it is. Well, then make a plan. Go out to the library. Go out to a public location somewhere and write or type on the computer or like work on some kind of a project or do something where you're out in public. You're not going to have to do that forever, but you do need to do it for a period of time while you're getting sober. And that's okay. It requires humility. It might feel like you're some kind of a child that needs to be babysat. And yeah, that sucks. Like it sucks to be like, man, I can't even trust myself well enough to be in the house alone for a couple of hours, like, what's wrong with me? And yeah, that sucks. But does it suck worse feeling a little ridiculous or, you know, kind of embarrassed? Or does it suck worse being addicted for the rest of your life? Again, I know that sounds harsh, but that's just the reality. Like, you got to ask yourself that. Am I willing to abase myself or be humble enough to say, I can't trust myself when I'm at home alone right now? One day I think that I'll be able to, but now is not that day. And so I'm not going to be at home alone by myself, or I'm not going to take my phone into the bathroom with me. I'm going to leave it outside the door every single time. Or I've got to give over my electronic devices at night and pick them back up in the morning. Or I can't go out to certain parties or to certain locations. You know, don't go to the swimming pool because it's just way too triggering for me. Whatever it is, you've got to admit it, and it sucks and it's hard. But the more these things that you sacrifice, you will gain far and above because of those sacrifices. So you have to ask yourself, are you done with this addiction? What is it taken from you? It requires courage to ask for help. But it's the stronger thing to do, because strength is not saying I'm going to do this by myself. It's not strength. It's not courage. That's called being foolish and prideful. Strength instead is saying I'm going to be honest about my limitations and my needs, and I'm going to be smart. I'm going to make a plan. I'm going to ask for help. So what are your vulnerable situations? Make a plan for what you'll do. Discuss that plan with someone else to hold you accountable. And a note to add on to that, this may even require you to get a dumb phone, Okay, everybody's got smartphones these days. Again, it is like being a heroin addict with a heroin needle in your pocket, on your person at all times. It's just not an option for most people during their initial several months of recovery. You've got to get it off your person at vulnerable times of the day or night. And yeah, so for me, I mean, I had to make changes with my electronic devices. I needed to hand them over. I'm having trouble remembering back to, you know, 9 years ago, a decade ago, but I believe I did have a dumb phone. I downgraded to a dumb phone for a period of time. And some people made fun of me. Some people wondered, why do you have that? Like, that's weird. I'm sure some people figured it out, like, oh, you have a porn problem. Yeah. Well, that's the way it is, right? Like, if you're afraid of that, first off, that's totally understandable to be afraid of that. But so what? What do you care what people think? You're getting sober, right? Let people think what they will. It's not about them. This is about the rest of your life. You need to make these changes, and they may be drastic for a time. And some people are going to think, why do you need to do all that? You don't need to do it. Do it anyway. It's not about them. It's about you. Okay. It's and by you making those differences in your life, those changes, many of which may be temporary and extreme, but eventually you'll be able to let up a bit as the months go by or the years, you're going to be able to do more good for other people because you're finally going to get this addiction out of your life. And that's important. That will enable you to do more good and focus more on others. But for a period of time, you got to focus on what changes you need to make. And then you can really dig deep into serving others the more and more that this addiction is removed from your life. And of course, I will add the more and more that you go about serving others, the more that really fuels recovery and takes you out of addiction. That's a whole nother thing. Practice number four. Practice number four is meaningful daily spiritual practice. Meaningful daily spiritual practice. Some people don't get this. Okay, and I'm open to people living in different ways as far as their recovery is done differently than mine. But I've seen pretty consistently, at least in my sphere, in my understanding, you need a daily spiritual practice that you stick to every day in order to get clean and sober. Again, for me, that looks like 20 minutes of scripture study, 20 minutes of prayer, and then most nights I will pray in the evening. So that 20-20, right, 20 minutes of scripture study, 20 minutes of prayer is done in the morning, and then in the evening I pray as well. And honestly, all throughout the day, I'm praying. Okay, there's a sacramental prayer. In my faith, I'm a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. We have a sacramental prayer where we covenant to remember Christ always, right? To always remember him, that we may have his spirit be with us. And that is very literal. You know, I am practicing that on a daily basis, and I think that that is ultimately what we need to do in order to find the greatest peace of mind, because this life is very much about learning to surrender to Christ. So I'm praying all throughout the day, you know, and sometimes that prayer can be perfectionistic or obsessive or ritualistic. And when it's that way, it's not helping me that much. I think God still honors the effort, but it's obviously not doing as much good as it could if it was more sincere and more real. So I try to keep those prayers more simple, more pure, more real, and not, you know, obsessive, perfectionistic, and like a routine or a ritual, or I'm saying the same thing all the time. So you have to be aware of that too, right? But getting this daily spiritual time, it's something I fought for years until eventually I accepted, like, I got to do this every day. And that's just simply the way it is. Because that's where my strength for the whole rest of the day comes from. It comes from God. And in order to really tap into that, I need some good, meaningful time. And that doesn't mean that my prayer scripture study every day is like awesome. It doesn't mean it always feels great. Some days it feels less meaningful than others. Some days it is deep. It's beautiful. And I'm not saying you have to take 20 minutes. That's me. And, you know, to be perfectly honest, I don't think as quickly as some people. I like to think deeply. Processing quickly is not so much a strength for me. It's kind of a weakness. But processing deeply is more my flow, right? So if I give myself a solid 20 minutes, most days I can get to a place where I really feel the Spirit and I really tap into that connection with God. So that's why I take that much time. And then if I'm reading scripture, 5 minutes some days can be like really good. You know, that could feel good. But if I give myself 20 minutes, I know that even on the hard days, most of the time, I will feel the Spirit in that period of time. So it's important. What is that for you? You know, what is that meaningful daily spiritual practice? You've got to incorporate it and commit to it and do it every single day. And then, of course, along with that, you know, just as a bonus practice, your physical health has a big impact on your ability to recover. I venture to say if you treat your body like crap, you will not be able to become free of addiction. That's obviously, you know, me stating something as a fact, which I think is never a good idea when it comes to stuff like this. But for me, there's a lot of foods that I've pretty much entirely removed from my life. Like I don't eat fast food. I mean, other than like things like Cafe Rio or Costa Vida or stuff that's, you know, a little less fast, right? But there's a lot of junk food and things that I just don't touch. Like I might eat a bite here or there. I just don't touch them. There's other foods that I just don't digest very well that really do impact my mental health and my mood. That would be dairy. Doesn't work out very well for my body at this point in my life. That'd be grains. Grains, I tend to kind of get lower energy. I don't seem to digest them very well. You know, maybe I get some racing thoughts or things like that. I've experienced that many times. And so eventually I just was like, man, I just am not going to eat grains right now. Maybe one day that'll change. I'm open to that. I've tried many times, but it's just kind of how my body reacts to it. And then processed sugar is something that I pretty much stay away from. And so I'm not saying you got to do all that. What I am saying is, it's important to look at your physical health as well. What changes might you need to make to your physical health in order to get sober? And don't try to make it all at once, but what just small little changes might you be able to make? Making one healthier decision, maybe you can get one extra serving of vegetables per day. I will say like eating vegetables has made sobriety so much easier for me. And the simple fact for that is there's vitamins, minerals, phytonutrients, other micronutrients in vegetables, and fiber and things that really help keep your digestion flowing well and help give your body the building blocks for good mental health and good physical health, because your brain requires vitamins, minerals, micronutrients. It requires your gut to be functioning well because your gut health and your brain health are interlocked in both ways, you know. And so it's important to consider that. So just to recap from this episode, I hope it's been really helpful for you. Again, practice one is to have an accountability buddy. Remember to confess to your buddy before you give in. Practice two is to give up your devices. Have scheduled times where you give your devices over to someone who lives with you most preferably. Practice three is to avoid vulnerable situations. Figure out what your vulnerable situations are. People, places, times. Stay out of vulnerable situations, even if it requires major changes. Like I know of someone, I know of someone that they would, when they'd go on vacation, they'd call ahead to have the place remove their TV from their room before they got there. That's how extreme they got, because they just knew they couldn't trust themselves. Now they don't have to do that anymore, but for a period of time they did, right? And that would feel so outside of the norm, so taboo, but it takes what it takes, man. It takes what it takes. You got to do that for yourself. And then number four is to have a meaningful daily spiritual practice. So I hope this has helped you. If you want to learn way more about addiction recovery, I have my free ebook. It is The 7 Causes of Addiction and the 7 Solutions for Recovery. 80 pages of completely free, very thick content that's straight, concise, to the point, to help you overcome addiction and really get an excellent idea overall of how recovery works, what leads to addiction, and how to experience sobriety long term. So if you want that free ebook, go to nomoredesire.com, scroll a bit down the page and click get my free copy, or go to the description of this podcast and click on free ebook and you can download it straight from there. Very last thing before you go, please rate this podcast. It helps me reach more people. I'd really appreciate your rating and your review. I want this to reach as many people as possible, and that requires your help, my friend. So have an amazing week. God bless and much love. Everything expressed on the No More Desire podcast are the opinions of the host and participants and is for informational and educational purposes only. This podcast should not be considered mental health therapy or as a substitute thereof. It is strongly recommended that you seek out the clinical guidance of a qualified mental health professional. If you're experiencing thoughts of suicide, self-harm, or a desire to harm others, please dial 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.